up when you're ready.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, we can start again. Okay, this is Pat Buffard, chair again. Second recording, we're on our agenda, our Board of Examiners for Nursing agenda. We are at B, Lincoln Tech Institute, request to use virtual clinical experiences. Helen?
Helen, before you begin, this is Stacey Schmelman, counsel to the board. Before you begin, I just want you to know that, as you're aware, in looking at the regulations 20-90-59,
Stacey, background noise, and I can't quite hear you.
Yeah, I hear myself.
Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So as you know, in accordance with the regulation 20-90-55, it specifies specifically how many clinical hours must be a part of the LPN curriculum. And concern that came from the board chair is whether you have the authority to waive that in light of the requirements coming from Lincoln Tech. I just want you to know that there is executive order from the governor's office 7K that grants that authority to the commissioner of public health to temporarily waive, modify, or suspend any regulatory requirement adopted by the commissioner of public health or any boards or commissions within your chapter inclusive. And that it is the as long as the commissioner of public health deems it necessary to reduce the spread of COVID-19 and to protect the public health. So what I'm saying here is, although Lincoln Tech is correct in bringing this to you for your review, it would come from you as maybe a recommendation to the department, that would be Chris Andreessen and Dana Dalton, to provide to the commissioner to have, who has ultimate authority to waive the regulation.
Okay. So thank you for that. Yes, I had asked Stacey to follow up on that based on the request from Lincoln Tech. So just for clarity, the issue, so there's two issues here. Now, you identified one in terms of we could perhaps reduce the minimum number of hours needed in a length of a program. Do we also have the authority to say that only 40% of contact hours shall be in supervised direct clinical experiences? Does that go hand in hand?
What I'm saying, you don't have the authority to make any modification. You can make a recommendation that the department can then share with the commissioner.
Okay, so we could say as a board, I have no idea how the discussion will go. This is just hypothetical, that 10% of the contact hours could be in simulation, but 40% has to be direct clinical, or we could do 25-25. We could do anything we want as a recommendation to the commissioner.
Correct. And the commissioner has the authority to make the waiver of the current requirements in the curriculum.
Okay. All right. Does all board members understand what our authority is here?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, great. Thank you. So, again, Helen, do you
want to
do the presentation?
Hi, I'm Helen Smith again. So, just really a brief presentation. So, Lincoln Technical Institute is requesting use of virtual clinical experiences. They have a letter dated April 3rd. And then they had sent a attachment A, which is labeled contingency plan, transition to online business education for curriculum delivery. And I think it does address in the later part the use of virtual clinical experiences. I think they talk about number five. So I'm not sure if Lincoln Technical Institute has anything to add.
I do have a statement that I'd like to read. This is Patty DeLucio, the corporate data nursing.
Okay, Patty, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for letting us present at this morning's board meeting. As I said, this is Patty DeLucio, the corporate dean of nursing. I do have a prepared statement that will only take a couple minutes to read, and I will email Holland a copy of the opening statement for the record. And as Helen said, we did submit a cover letter with a contingency plan to Helen at the beginning of April. So also on the call with me is Debbie Little. Debbie is the Corporate Assistant Dean of Nursing and Program Administrator of the Connecticut Linking Nursing Programs. And also on the call is Francis Giulio, who is Lincoln Technical Institute Senior Vice President of Compliance and Regulatory Services. And both of them are available to answer any questions that you might have, as well as myself. Our purpose in requesting this hearing is to ask the board to reconsider the use of virtual clinical for Lincoln's practical nursing programs in Connecticut. That was denied at the March 18th board meeting. Our original request was made due to the lockout of our students in traditional clinical settings that are mostly long-term care facilities. And without the ability to allow our practical nursing students to academically progress using virtual clinical, our school is left to consider its options for all of our students to continue their enrollment at Lincoln Tech. Included is 134 students with graduation dates in May, July, and August of 2020. The only option we could surmise was to slow down the hours of classroom activity and extend each student's graduation date. And while the board, I know, doesn't consider the issues of a nursing student's financial situation, this decision has had a tremendous impact on the student's financial aid. Thus, after much consideration, we're making another request to the board that is really quite straightforward, to consider Lincoln Tech's practical nursing programs to be granted conditional approval to initiate a major curriculum change pursuant to the Connecticut Nursing Education Program and licensure requirements as noted in section 20-90-47C. The major curriculum change would be the use of virtual clinical for our students, and we have provided board members with our COVID curriculum contingency plan. Lincoln's nursing programs had the resources and the ability to conduct virtual clinical, and this request would only be executed during this period of time in which our students are unable to complete their clinical hours on site with our clinical partners. In addition to providing the board with an updated plan for implementation with rationale, a current timeline, and an evaluation process for this major curriculum change, we would provide the board with quarterly updates on NCLEX scores for those students who completed virtual clinical versus those who completed traditional clinical. Further, we would provide the board with updates on the students' completion as well as the graduates being placed with Connecticut employers. We know there's a tremendous need for our practical nursing students in the current environment. The Executive Order 7B recently signed by Governor Lamont would allow our graduates to practice temporarily for 90 days. Also, the governor's most recent executive order, 7Y, to move all discharged COVID patients from acute care settings into COVID recovery facilities where LPNs predominantly work will impact staffing in these facilities. Unfortunately, without the ability to use virtual clinical, there will be 134 soon-to-be graduates from our program sitting on the sidelines during this pandemic, some of whom have up to 90% of their clinical hours completed. I also wanted to let you know that the Connecticut National Guard requested the names of any students, particularly in our practical nursing programs, who would be interested in volunteering in any capacity.
I am extremely proud to say that we had over 60 students respond in the affirmative that they would volunteer without any knowledge of what position they would be put in. Finally, our nursing programs are part of a larger system of institution in multiple states, and Debbie and I have the opportunity to work with the boards of nursing in the states of Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and New Jersey. In each case, the boards have provided our Lincoln nursing programs with the flexibility to use virtual clinical without any restriction during the current healthcare crisis. I would be remiss if I did not request for the board to make its decision based on our merits as a program. We are a program that has been offered in the state of Connecticut for decades. We have averaged over 90% pass rate for our first-time testers on NCLEX over the past 5 years, graduated almost 900 students, with 95% being Connecticut residents, and placed almost 80% of those students with Connecticut employers as LPNs. We play a large role in the healthcare system, especially in long-term care facilities, where we know there is a dire need for our graduates. We can bring those graduates to those facilities with your affirmative vote today. And I do want to thank you very much for placing our school on the agenda, and we are open to answer any questions you might have.
Questions for Patty from board members?
Hi, this is Mary Gateman. You said that about 90, there are some students out of these 134 who have 90% of clinical hours completed. Is that correct?
Yes, I have a cohort graduating May 29th of 2020. There are 47 students, and they have completed 86.4 of the clinical hours in Shelton and 86% in New Britain. We have an evening cohort graduating July 13th of 2020. That is a cohort of 28 students, and they have completed 672 hours of clinical, which is 89.7% of their clinical requirement. And we also have an August 26th cohort of 59 students that have completed 57.6% of their total clinical hours.
And have any of your clinical partners provided any information as to when they will reopen their facilities to clinical?
No, we do check with them periodically, and to date they have not offered us a date to return.
When was the last time that you've gotten a written statement from them?
We called. We have a list, a clinical site list, and we had called and documented the response. They were not obtained in writing.
Thank you. This is Pat Buffard. Any other questions from board members?
Can I just, I'm just looking at 2952. It's Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you. 2952 with the curriculum for the practical nurse program states that 750 hours shall be in supervised direct clinical care experiences. Correct. Observational and simulated. So I just want to be clear
I don't believe there's a simulated clause in there.
2955 for LPNs. Not 52, that's just the RNs.
I'm sorry. You're right. It's 1,500, and I'm saying 750 hours.
For clinical.
Shall be supervised direct clinical care. And so those students and observational experience. So those students, let's take one particular school where you said they have completed 84% of their clinical hours.
86% would be the May 29th cohort, yes, the graduating cohort.
Yeah, so they have about
But I do have, excuse me, the July is also 89%. So we have actually two cohorts between 86 and 89% of their clinical complete.
And these students that are graduating, you want to know if they can complete the remaining hours to bring them up to the 750 using simulation?
Yes,
or
virtual
really,
clinical.
You can't bring them. Yeah, it has to be virtual. You're not going to bring them anywhere. It's a virtual.
Right, and we have a lot of resources.
Yep. Are all of these students equipped, you know, with the technology and the internet and the computers to do virtual learning, knowing that the population that make up the students in these programs aren't necessarily... You know, they come from a different population. They may not have the not only the skills, but they not, may not have the equipment to do anything like this. What about that?
So what we do, we as part of the admission process, all the students are given a laptop on admission, and all the programs are loaded, all software is loaded onto the programs for them. There's a technology orientation program that's done within the first, I'd say, week, 2 weeks of the program. And we have a long-term LMS. We use Canvas. So our students, you know, we use a lot of online resources to begin with. We use API. We use SimChart. The resources that we outlined in the section of the clinical proposal are not new resources. They're resources that are already embedded and integrated into our program and curriculum.
Yes, I see that. And there is 100% attendance with those students. They are able to attend to those particular strategies. Okay.
Yes, we've done a big rollout just to make sure that everybody had access to internet, whether it was free or discounted rates, that we accommodated them one by one as trouble came up as we transitioned to didactic online. So we've been able to, our attendance rate is really good with the didactic online learning.
And then this is Debbie, also from Lincoln, on that COVID contingency plan. If you look at number one and number two, those have the specific dates of the big rollout that was done, and the students were able to successfully start distance learning for the didactic courses on March 19th.
And with the LMS, Canvas is very robust. We're able to do discussion threads. We're able to do Canvas conferencing. We're able, the resources within Canvas are pretty robust, and we're able to reach all of our students at all of the time. Debbie and I often just go into the faculty, you know, the classes and the faculty meetings. We've been able, you know, we've been able to roll out successfully so far.
Mary Dietman here. I didn't see debriefing. Are you doing debriefing in these virtual clinical excursions? I don't see that in here.
We're not allowed to do clinical as yet, but the VCE program, the virtual clinical excursion program, is like a virtual hospital. You kind of walk into it. The student enters. They can pick a chart out, and you know, there's a variety of nursing care plans and medication and laboratory data that they can access.
So they're not doing this yet, but this is your plan, correct?
We really want this to be our plan. Yes, we need approval to progress with that.
But I think my point is that if this is the plan and it doesn't include debriefing, which is considered the heart of simulation, I don't know how we could approve a plan for virtual or for the virtual simulation that doesn't include an essential part of simulation.
So pre and post conferences could be conducted on Canvas conferencing with the faculty. Those are just resources.
And then Debbie, also, to point out, that's okay. Also, we're currently, this plan is currently in place for the other five nursing programs. And there absolutely is debriefing. Some of the debriefing is synchronous, meaning they're all, you know, together and on video. And also some of the debriefing includes, you know, more post-assignments to see what the student's level of understanding is, their ability to apply critical thinking and clinical judgment to these case scenarios. So there's a lot of interaction that we've been doing with using these resources.
I have a question. This is Margie.
So that I'm sorry, go ahead, Marge.
You know, this is a huge change for a lot of these students and for the instructors. And I was just wondering, how many students are you allowing per instructor, and how many instructors are to the teaching faculty themselves?
We still have all of our pre-distance learning faculty that are available clinically. We always kept the 10-to-1 maximum of a 10-to-1 ratio for clinical in all of our programs. And our class size goes from anywhere from 8 to about 25 per didactic.
So you're not going to reduce your clinical sizes?
No.
To accommodate the learning?
No, I mean, to your point, it's the new rollout, so we want to keep as much the same as we can.
Okay. No, I just had one more question. The learning part on the faculty of using all of this computer software, I know some of it they've already been using, the virtual they haven't been. And I know the students, too. Have you put anything into place to, I know that you say that you have high-level instructors or whatever. What have you put into place to make sure that the students aren't having trouble getting in and out and doing what they need to do?
We take attendance. We reach out to students individually within Canvas. You can email, you can conference. They communicate by cell phone. They're in constant contact with their students. And you're right, it was a very big transition for the faculty and the students. But Lincoln Tech as an organization had and continues to have trainings and tips and ideas and faculty meetings and director of nursing meetings. We're just in constant communication and assessing needs and putting training in place where the needs exist.
And also, Patty and I are involved on a daily basis. Each campus, each director of nursing meets with their faculty on Skype meetings. And because Patty and I attend all these meetings, we're also able to look collectively at how the programs are doing, specific student discussions take place so that we're reaching them individually. And we're also able to identify which, you know, areas are need improvement on a specific campus and where are their strengths. And there's a lot of sharing. We have identified some faculty, what we call super users. So this goes on a daily basis to make sure that this rollout's been successful.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Sharing.
Okay. I'm looking at this attachment, and it looks like it was completed on March 16th. And what I don't get here is that you have already made these changes from mid-March. And what is it that you want to do? I mean, it should be highlighted, the things that you have implemented, because
Oh, you're right, yeah.
And what is
the didactic portions have been implemented. The clinical portions have been implemented in Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and New Jersey, but not in Connecticut based on our last meeting.
But we don't care what they do in Pennsylvania. We're only responsible for Connecticut.
So we're requesting number five.
Number five. Okay, so let me see here.
Page five.
Number five.
Right. Web-based resources.
Page five, six, and seven.
Do you want to supplement web-based resources for not clinical content, but for clinical experiences?
Yes.
It's not content. Content is didactic. Clinical experience is different.
Yes, I agree.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. So how are you going to account for the hours? Because you have specific hours. So if you take number five and you bring down number five and look at all of the different things, how many hours is that? 10? 15, 20, what?
No, we're maintaining the same number of hours. What's changed is the delivery method, or what we've done in the other three state programs. So
this could be 750 clinical hours, all under number five?
The
instructors submit lesson plans and assignments, and the delivery is just remote.
All right. I think Jerry, what they're asking is, of the 750 hours for these three graduating classes, I would say, if I could do the math easily, that 89% has already been done for one cohort. So that means they need 10% to be simulation, or 14% to be simulation. And the May and July classes. Is that correct? You're not asking for doing all your 750 hours. You're not asking for that. You're asking for the completion of these three cohorts to be done virtually, correct?
Yes. I mean, I do think we have the ability to do some of the lab skills virtually. The students can videotape. They can submit. And, of course, we would do a skill and competency check on our return to school. We're all hoping that we're able to return to school soon.
Thank you for acknowledging that this was a big change in transitioning classroom on-ground classes to online. But I noted that you mentioned in addressing with Jerry that with clinical and clinical sizes, you want to keep things the same as much as possible. And so that brings me back to your contingency plan, which I have an issue with in terms of approving. Because when we're looking at interactive clinical scenarios with Davis and virtual clinical excursions through Evolve, and I'm very familiar with these products and more, they're not the plan. It cannot be administered in a similar manner or keeping things as similar as possible. There needs to be a more extensive plan. As I said before, debriefing becomes vital. Yes, you can say that you're going to do it, but it's not in this plan. And I don't think that looking at this plan, looking at this plan as it's presented, it's not something that I could be in favor of because it's not comprehensive enough to meet clinical outcomes.
And this is Jerry. I have one other thing on number five. And Mary is the expert with all of these interactive things because, you know, she's very involved with that. I'm not. But in number five, you have web-based resources for clinical content, which is clinical experiences.
but you haven't stated web-based resources for those programs or those students who have maybe 15% remaining of clinical content or clinical experience. You seem to have put this in so that if you bring in a new class, this can also supplement for them. It would have to be very, very specific to address.
Yes, I agree. This is an overview of our resources and what we are able to do. I apologize if certainly we excluded pre and post conference and debriefing. It was excluded in the plan, certainly not in the rollout. We have the 10 to 1 ratio with the students. We're doing pre-conference, we're doing post-conference, we're meeting individually, we're still doing care planning and case studies, and so I would be able, Debbie and I could easily put more detail and a lesson plan together, but if there are specific pieces that are left out of the plan, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're left out of the execution of virtual clinical. That would be a short, you know, that would be a more detailed submission that we're prepared to send.
Having had 86% of their clinical completed, and I look at the assessment technologies, the ATI skills, it looks as though some of these should have been done already. I mean, basic skills.
Well, it was. I mean, it's a progressive program. It starts, you know, mod one clinical skills will be different than the second term clinical skills than the third and the fourth. You're correct.
So wouldn't it be better to, like, break down and just put in those clinical skills that you need in order to complete the program when you've already completed 84% of your hours or something like that? Why would you start over from scratch? It's too broad. Very broad.
Well, the way we've been using this is that we're using virtual clinical in all our cohorts. From fundamentals.
Oh, I didn't think you were doing that yet. I thought you were asking us.
Wait, not in Connecticut. This is based on what we are currently been doing since March 19th in the other five schools that are located in the other three states. So,
right, but we're not talking about them. You're not doing that in Connecticut. So let's just, this is not being done in Connecticut.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
But if we have students in fundamentals that need skills, we can use, for example, the ATI skills modules that has, as it says, the pre-test, the lesson, the post-test. They can video other creative things. And then when they return to school, we do like a boot camp type of lab to make sure we validate these competencies and give any additional learning that's needed. But that's okay, why it has everything listed, you know.
I think that you and I are not on the same page here. I'm talking about the here and now. I'm talking about the three groups that are scheduled to graduate May, June, and July, or August, whatever that is. I'm talking about the fact that they have completed so many hours of clinical experience with real live people, and they still need to have supplemental. So telling me that they're going to learn foundational skills, that looks like you're bringing in a whole new group of students that from scratch. You're going to learn fundamentals. They should have had
The SimChart resource that we have is they're unfolding case studies. It is such a robust site. You can document, you can give meds, you can, it's so robust that it could really, you know, you tailor it down for the beginning student, but it's still applicable for the graduating student. It just increases in level of difficulty and complexity in comparison to their learning objectives of the specific clinical course.
Yeah, but I'm looking at ATI. I'm looking at Davis. I get that SIM chart, that Elsevier one. I get that one. That seems to be a little bit more sophisticated. I get that one. But you have rolled out four different companies to meet the clinical experience for
students who have already completed 84% of their clinical. I just want to be clear that that's what we're looking at.
So what it sounds to me is that we presented to you a complete proposal for virtual clinical and did not tailor it or update it to be specific for the three cohorts that were graduating between or hoping to graduate between May and August. That have
well, the letter that was just
percentages that you're talking about.
But the prepared statement that was just read to us was very specific for these three groups. That's what you put forward for these three groups.
I think we made the points for those three groups specifically because they are so close and they are so advanced in their education.
Yeah.
And kept it generic to all of our groups.
Yeah, that's
this is Margie Brown again. Do you have students that are presently in their first semester?
Yes.
Did you start a class in April or March?
A didactic class.
Four new students.
Our last cohort in Connecticut started on days in March and our evenings in February.
It's 10
so,
months.
No, it's
so
a
what
12-month
you
program,
really are proposing?
20.
What you really are proposing is for them to also begin some clinical hours in fundamentals, and
I would like that. I my concern is for the current healthcare crisis and assisting and getting the graduates that are so, but my priority is the graduates that have completed upwards of 85% of their clinical requirement, but certainly, you know, I'm open to and I think we have the resources to start lab skills, but I'm most concerned with getting these last three cohorts that are so close out to graduation and into the workforce. Either as GNs or, you know, getting them through the testing process. We understand that being so far in the program puts these students at significant risk of delaying their NCLEX and, you know, retaining the information and the progression pace that they're used to.
The other thing, in terms of the pedagogy for the newer students that are entering the program, is that, you know, it's not as easy to connect theory with practice if they don't do any skills or any clinical simulation with the debriefing. So to be able to begin that while they're beginning with the program, which would help them really be able to apply some of that new knowledge that they're learning. And then, of course, once the pandemic lockout is lifted, they would be able to go right into the clinical areas. But to have no clinical connection at all while they're doing theory, we don't really think is the optimum way for the students to learn. So that's why we looked at all of the clinical across cohorts.
But with particular emphasis on the people on our students who have completed a significant number of in-person direct clinical experiences.
This is Jerry again. I want to just make a point that
okay.
I want to make a point that the study that was done by the NCNSB was a huge study, and I hope that you've read it. But it never did not address practical nursing. It was for the BSN student, the RN student, and they did an enormous amount of work and studies. We don't have any data. We don't have any verification. We know, and we assume as educators that you want to have theoretical, didactic, connect with clinical learning. That's the ideal. And we can't always get to that ideal. But we don't have any studies that we can rely on. And I'm very nervous because the groups of students in this state have had historically very high attrition rate for many reasons. And I am not convinced that it's appropriate to apply this across the board to students who are beginning in the program. I am just concerned, and I don't want this to be, you know, misunderstood.
So
that we're concerned about the next three groups that have finished almost 84% of their clinical learning. I think that's the priority today. That's the priority.
I agree with you.
Mary Deepman, I'm in agreement with that. I think that that's what we need to address is the three groups who finished more than 85% or whatever that number is, but to be giving virtual simulation approval to students who are new or beginning their program, I am not comfortable at all with this plan. I cannot endorse it in any way.
Yeah, Pat Bouffard here.
I think we're focusing on the three cohorts that are facing graduation. The May 29th cohort, we have 47 students that have completed 86.4% and 86% of their clinical, respectively, for the Shelton and New Britain campuses. We have an evening cohort in July that's graduated the 13th that has 89.7% of their clinical completed, and the August cohort of 59 students is 57% of their clinical is completed.
This is Kathy.
Sorry, Mary Deepman, I'm sorry, 57%, 5-7, can you clarify that?
Yes, we have three cohorts that are graduating this summer. They are May, July, and August. Our May cohort has concluded 86%. The July cohort, because they're an evening program and they go to school for 2 years, have completed 89.7%. And the August cohort, Jerry, to your point, is much less at 57.6 and 57, respectively, across the two campuses.
Okay. So I think this is Pat Bouffard speaking. I think Jerry and Mary are correct. I think right at this point in time, we should concentrate on just looking at these three graduating classes. I think that was your original intent. I believe the May graduates and the July graduates are more than appropriate to allow some virtual clinic experiences. I'm less convinced that 59% or 57% is really enough. So I think we need to concentrate only on the May and July graduates at this point in time. I think the issue that Mary Brown brought up, Marge brought up, was that if they want to use virtual clinical experiences at the beginning class, that's fine, but it can't be counted at this point in time in their direct patient clinical experiences. So they deal with that on their own. So I think right now we just need a motion on the May and the July classes. And then we'll see what happens in May to see if this becomes moot anyway, hopefully. So I think, could we have a motion on the May and the July classes at Lincoln Tech in terms of allowing some virtual clinical experience then to complete?
Before the motion is made, and I agree, Pat, that's a great thought, but what we do for one, what are we going to do with the others? I mean,
I think it'll be like our end classes if they have in good standing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they're the only Mary Deepman, they're the only program in good standing. The others are not in good standing.
Plus, we don't have a plan for the other programs.
All right.
Remember, we're sort of waiving the 2090-47. We're not really, because they have provided us a plan. So they're clear with that. What we're waiving or recommending to the commissioner a change in our regs or a revision in our regs for this particular time period is in 20-90-55, where they don't have to have 750 hours in direct patient care.
Right. Okay.
So that's what
we're looking at now. And so just like we said with the RN programs, they have to be in good standing. And they're the only ones that provide a plan, so this is very specific to Lincoln Tech.
Okay, I got it.
The motion should be, you know, crafted that way.
And this is Debbie again. May I just add one comment? And I appreciate the board's concern about students transitioning, going from 0 to 100, as I say, with face-to-face to online. But please keep in mind that these students in Connecticut are currently doing distance education very successfully in their didactic courses. So I just, you know, it's not like only the clinical. They currently are in, it's currently in place. Thank you.
Yes, and the board rules and regulations don't really address didactic education. So how you deliver that is not, we don't have a concern about it. You can do it any way you kind of want.
Yeah, it could be hybrid. Yes,
but I'm just highlighting that these students are currently successful in the online environment. I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying that. Thanks. All right.
So okay, so can
I
make the motion? I'll make a motion. All right, I make a motion that we approve the contingency plan put forth by Lincoln Tech Practical Nursing Program to complete the clinical requirement for those students graduating, scheduled to graduate in May and in June.
July.
But July. Okay.
Period. 2020.
As we approve it, we also want to make the recommendation to the governor that we endorse this plan.
Commissioner.
Correct. Commissioner of Public Health. I'm sorry. Yes. The Commissioner of Public Health.
All right, a second.
Second, Mary Dietman.
Okay, discussion. Board member discussion.
This is Lisa Freeman. I don't want to take up too much time, but I just do want to mention that there's, I appreciate the forward thinking of this, and while we don't want to take too many steps forward ourselves in recommending this can go on for, you know, an indefinite period of time, I think we should all keep in mind that the regulations and restrictions may let up, and then there could always be a second wave that impacts things. So I hope that Lincoln and our board will just continue thinking about, you know, being able to regroup quick, something like that happens.
This is Captain.
Because one of our major issues, well, as a board, is the safety of the public, but also you should be looking at what's best for the student and the student's learning, so in this time of chaos.
Pat Buffard speaking. Yes. For those of us who've been on the board for, oh gosh, now 8 years maybe, 6 years, we did revise the regulations based on recommendations from educators a while ago, which is still sitting on one desk, where we did allow 10% of clinical experiences to be done with simulation. We didn't talk about virtual at the time because virtual wasn't really a concern of us at the time. So I think I can agree with Jerry's recommendation. I think, as Mary pointed out, Marge pointed out, these are unique, exceptional times. And I want to acknowledge what Lisa said, too. We might be back here in August, with the issues still there. So I think we have to keep that in mind, but we'll deal with it when we have to deal with it. So additional comments from board members?
No, I just didn't know if you wanted to put the number of the statute in there, but it doesn't matter to me.
Stacey, should we?
Mary Dietman, though.
I think it's best to note that looking at 20-90-65 substance B of the Clinical Nursing Education Program regulations.
The board recommends that, whatever Jerry said.
Yep.
Yes.
Do you accept that friendly amendment there, Jerry and Mary?
Of course I do.
Yes, I approve. Mary Deepman approves. Yes.
I just want to be sure. Okay, so Jeff, can you read that to us then with the change Stacy just made?
Well, it's been recorded, so I think my shorthand isn't as good as a recording. So if, we're going to be all set here. I will clarify it with Stacy to make sure it's accurate for the record and for the minutes.
Okay, great. So all in favor of the motion as presented?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining. Debbie and Patty, just provide, so it was unanimous, I better say that for the record, Pat Florida, unanimous for the vote. I think just for the record, would you provide sort of a very specific contingency plan specifically for those two classes about exactly what you're going to do and be sure you cover how. Elaborate on the debriefing part. I think for the records, that would be great.
Okay. Exactly. Yes. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Okay. Hopefully, we can get on track for your August class, but we'll know better in May and June.
Yeah, we're hoping to get back to Sunfield as soon as we can.
Yeah. Okay, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, board members. Very good. Okay. So next on the agenda, there's a question? Yeah, okay. Next on the agenda is Lincoln Tech Institute. We just did that. Porter and Chester Institute. Please identify who's on the phone from Porter and Chester.
Good morning, Mr. Fard. This is Deborah Hessel, Acting Director of Nursing for Porter and Chester. Would you like me to introduce the other members
on the call for the minutes?
So we have Mrs. Nancy Brunette. She's the Assistant Director of Nursing and Campus Director. We have Elizabeth Rodriguez, who's our Director of Clinical Experience. We have Dr. Philip Krebs, who's our Vice President of Operations and Education. We have Attorney John Feldman. We have, still Mr. James Beloga, who is our President and CEO. And we also have Sherry Greisu, who is the Educational Consultant that we introduced to the board last month.
Would you please, you said James, and I didn't get the last name.
Bologa, B-O-L-O-G-A.
Oh, Bologna. Okay. I just couldn't, there's some kind of background noise, and I think it's our phones echoing.
Oh.
Okay, so Helen, please present.
Hello.
Do you have any presentation on this?
So, Helen Smith here again. So, what I did provide to the department, and then Jeff forwarded some information. I know prior to the last meeting, Porter and Chester had sent two documents, and I just wanted each board member to look at them. Again, as I discussed about the didactic materials being done online, and then the resume for their educational consultant, Sherry, just so that everybody could look at that. And then I believe Jeff forwarded the email from Deborah from Monday afternoon, April 6th. And that includes a rebuttal, their rebuttal to my report of the clinical observation. And then the email talks about, Deborah talked about, there's no additional updates to the corrective action plan, with the exception that faculty are completing an in-service seminar on online teaching techniques. And the consultant, Ms. Grace, has begun her review of the Porter Chester program, and the review will be forthcoming. So that's you know, that's the information that I have.
Okay, thank you. Deborah, do you want to provide an overview for the board members?
Thank you, Mr. Fahd. Yes, so good morning again. I'd like to say, I do have a prepared statement here if I read that out. I would like to thank you all for taking the time to review our comments to the presentation by Ms. Smith at last month's meeting. And to summarize our thoughts on the report, it is our belief and opinion that the information you received was unbalanced, focusing on isolated negative incidences, and yet you are not made aware of any positive attributes of our program. When focusing on isolated negative occurrences, it becomes harder for you to lose sight of the fact that these are students working within a learning environment, and that such isolated occurrences probably happen with students from other institutions. There are, as you will have observed, many comments that we disagree with or have put the incident in context. We take issue with the comments that the program is unsafe, as this is not fair, nor is it based on fact. This damages the reputation of Port Chester and that of the hard work of faculty and staff in producing future healthcare professionals to provide quality care for the population of the state of Connecticut. We have spent enormous time and effort in responding to every alleged deficiency without question. However, we want you to know that we have a very good program and we are all very proud of it. I would like to now ask Ms. Sherry Greisu, the education consultant introduced at last month's meeting. I would like to now invite her to speak. She was introduced at last month's meeting. She's been reviewing our corrective action plans and program over the past month and has been working with myself to address the alleged deficiencies.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Deb.
Good morning.
First of all, I want to thank you for allowing me to speak this morning to address the issue, as well as I hope you're all safe during this COVID crisis, because I know it gives an awful lot of challenges for not only our professional practice, but our families and friends as well. My name is Sherry Greisu, and as an educational consultant, I've been engaged by PCI to review and assess the board's findings and concerns about the PN program and make recommendations to ensure that the program satisfies all regulatory requirements. I am pleased to have the opportunity to do this. I do value the practical nurse programs because I found throughout my experience as a manager and educator and a CNS and as adjunct faculty for three universities, many of the AB at BSN and master's programs, actually the LPNs, they all began as practical nurses and then and provided a great seed and a pipeline for needed nurses and healthcare delivery. It is the role and responsibility of the faculty and clinical educators to educate, nurture, coach, and support the students throughout their program and to set the students up for success. So I want to share with you the process that I began, and then I have some reporting I'd like to share as well. It won't take too long. My consulting process began with the objectives of reviewing the board's findings and concerns over the past 9 months and from March 2000 and in 2020 and responding with action plans for correction. I conducted a gap analysis of the board's findings and the work that exists or has changed. I also evaluated the curriculum and its learning objectives, reviewing each course's substantive content to evaluate the objectives, review for clarity, identify gaps, and make recommendations for corrective action. The review and assessment of the faculty and clinical educators with the intent to look at the education background, experience, and qualifications as an educator, the preparedness for the course, curriculum, and ability to uphold the education theory and evaluate student performance and outcomes, reviewing the faculty and clinical educators for their effectiveness as an educator, their ability to translate the content to the bedside and clinical rotations, observe their interaction and face-to-face support of the student in the classroom and in clinical practice, and also to assess the grasp of PCI and facility policies and procedures and standards of practice of nursing in the specific clinical and practice environments. I also wanted to look at how they prepare for clinical practicums and teach the students, how they prepare their students for the NCLEX exam, how they assist the director of the practical nursing program, the leadership team of PCI in evaluating the quality of the program and the ability to make recommendations for improvement. But at first, I just wanted to inform you of my previous experience as an educator and a consultant in hopes that I can gain your trust and confidence in addressing any outstanding concerns that the board may have with respect to the PCIPN program. Just very briefly, I have extensive experience in nursing education, curriculum development, as well as on-site evaluations of faculty at academic programs, such as Maria College in Albany, New York, Post University in Waterbury, Connecticut, Franklin Pierce in New Hampshire. And then in the healthcare organizations, I've worked with medical centers, and most recently, I've had some experience with you with Connecticut Children's Medical Center. These programs included the range of healthcare licensed and unlicensed professionals, and I'm happy to provide copies to the board today if you'd like them. I've worked with many boards of nursing in Vermont and New Hampshire through my employment, as well as spoke with some of you about evaluating the medical assistant program and scope of practice while I was at Connecticut Children's Medical Center, and you were very supportive of me when I was revising their orientation and scope of practice standards and competency for their certification, national certification exams as well. It's my intent in describing my experiences to gain your confidence that what I have identified and found to meet your satisfaction. So the findings to begin with were challenged with the COVID-19 pandemic, which is preventing us from doing the face-to-face on-site evaluation of the faculty, the instructors, and processes that I have defined in my report. I anticipate that this can start occurring in a methodical process within 2 months or immediately after the stay-home mandate has been lifted. I will work with the director of nursing, the assistant director of nursing, the director of clinical experience, and the individual campus education supervisors in the formulation of strategic evaluation plans and conducting the extensive face-to-face, just-in-time evaluations of all faculty. It's my initial findings, and so now I want to report out on my initial findings and strengths and opportunities of the program. I want to assure the board that PCI does have a robust PN program. When I looked at the content and the academic successes of 85% pass rate of NCLEX, and it resulted in an 81% in employment for the LPNs placed that have graduated. In reviewing the objectives and fundamentals of each course, I find the goals and the objectives are clear, they are well articulated, and support the content and the objectives and stated outcomes. So my personal opinion as a consultant, it is a robust curriculum hosted through the Canvas platform, and the curriculum provides a variety of learning methods to promote student learning. For example, faculty-driven instruction, subject-specific videos, case studies, in-class assignments, independent study, NCLEX review exams, as well as one-to-one classroom faculty-student interaction, and clinical placement for their clinical experience. I have found in talking to some of the staff and the leadership that PCI is very committed to their student success and does follow policies and procedures. The willingness of the PCI leadership when I address some of the issues is that they are the leadership team to address the specific individual findings from the site visit. As noted, I wanted to, was quite impressive as far as the responses. The director, Jeff Passel, has revised the faculty observation frequency and put action plans in place, created just-in-time infection control student monitoring, created pre- and post-conference planning, content, and student expectations. The director, Deborah Hassel, has taken action and terminated faculty not adhering to the standards of nursing practice and student support and guidance, as evidenced from your site visits that were identified in March. The director has revised and assured checklists and orientation sheets for each specific clinical site to assure that they're completed. and the students and faculty educators are aware of the clinical site's requirements and nursing policies and procedures. Deborah Hassel has also met with clinical faculty, campus practical nurse education supervisors, and the director of clinical experience to review the medication policies and procedures, end-of-life instructions, and advance directives, HIPAA adherence, residence rights, as well as the student's progress and plans. Deborah has also met with some clinical faculty to assure patient assignment knowledge and roles and expectations for each other, PCI and the clinical site, the policies and standards are followed and upheld. You have already reviewed the responses that PCI provided to you regarding the department's findings, but I will address a few right now. After reviewing the course content and the policy program guidelines, the handbook, the expectations of the program, the documented expectations of the staff, and the revisions that were made or added, the following and the latest evidence, although I'm impressed overall with the program and the dedication of its nursing leadership, I believe, for a better terminology, the Achilles heel may be the standardization of the instruction provided by some of its faculty and the ability of the faculty to adhere to the PCI learning objectives. Therefore, it's in my opinion that PCI may need to spend additional time working with its faculty, conduct ongoing additional performance reviews, and to validate their competence and performance in real-time, face-to-face observation at the clinical rotations and in the classrooms. PCI hires appropriately credentialed faculty. They have master's and DNP degrees who have impressive nursing careers. And to ensure standardization and consistency of content delivery and clinical site supervision and mentoring of the students, PCI is currently working on a comprehensive classroom and clinical onboarding program, and in addition, will continue to develop and apply their ongoing quarterly evaluation of the faculty to ensure compliance. Not only to ensure compliance with educational clinical standards, but to ensure safe, standardized, quality education so the students can excel and be safe in the clinical practice at the bedside. To that end, in collaboration with the Director of Nursing, I have created already a step-by-step process and tools which will be used by the Assistant Director and the Practical Nurse Education Supervisors to use to evaluate and serve each educator face-to-face in real time, to see education and delivery, how the students follow through at the different sites as well. The face-to-face evaluation and monitoring of the instructor-educator while teaching the students will include how skilled the educator is in their knowledge and delivery of the subject matter, how the educators are prepared, how their behaviors and delivery style is provided to the student, the continual support provided to the student in the classroom, campus clinical lab, and the clinical experience, and how the clinical instructor provides the just-in-time correction when students fail to follow standards of practice within the campus clinical lab, as well as during their clinical experiences. This process will, although it's a huge lift, this process will provide insight of the educator's ability and performance as an educator to identify deficits within their student interactions, preparedness, and also then discover their consistencies in following safety and healthcare standards, which will guide PCI in their staff development correction efforts. These how-to action steps will be used to ensure the necessary changes in the program and will support the standardization of the nursing education delivered and the clinical rotation environment. We will also incorporate a student assessment survey after each course to not only evaluate the course and content, but also evaluate the instructor and and use this feedback for future and ongoing improvements for the program. In summary, PCI and I are confident that when we complete these steps and follow-up evaluations and validate the faculty's performance, we will confirm that the findings that were identified in your report in March were outliers, which were handled immediately with the termination of staff and the correction of the findings to an existing strong PN program. However, if we discover that there are needed improvements in the areas that were cited in the department's report, which PCI responded to today, we are confident that we can address them and correct them to move forward of nursing standards. As I mentioned earlier, as soon as the COVID-19 stay-at-home mandate is lifted, we anticipate and would like to start this process immediately within 2 months and have it completed with the faculty evaluation follow through with another 2 months by August and then report back to you with our successes. Thank you for allowing me to address you today. Do you have any questions?
Hello, this is Mary Dietman. Thank you very much for your report. You stated that you have read Ms. Smith's last visit, and of course we have read the PCI response. Can you acknowledge that you've read her prior visits to site visits for Porter and Chester?
Yes, I have. I can validate and say and positively say that I have read the reports from the beginning of last year in 19 of each visit, clinical issues, and then most recently from, I mean, I read all of them every month and all the reports, all the meeting minutes and everything. And when I looked at the most recent ones with the theme that was carried through all of that, what I found is that the initial intervention was very good, educating the faculty, making sure that they signed off, that they were educated, making sure that they saw all the policies and procedures, that they were aware of the medication policy, that they were aware of the HIPAA guidelines. What I did not see, and that's what I think is really critical as an educator myself with my experience, is that sometimes there is a lack in the operationalizing of all of that information on how it translates to the student, how the faculty can impart that to the student, and how it is followed through and retained by the student in the clinical arena at the clinical site with patient care. So that's where I really, when I looked at everything, I saw from an assessment point of view, when I'm looking at curriculum and I'm looking at programs, I look at all that from not only identifying the objectives, looking at the methods of delivery and education, but then how is each step identified and conducted, and how do you evaluate the outcome not only of the students? Yes, we have the NCLEX exams. Yes, we have the periodic testing and the care plans and everything, but how effective is the faculty teaching the student and translating the information that they're given, whether it's online or in the classroom in a skills lab, and adapting that in clinical practice with the clinical site to reinforce that on a daily basis. And that's where, in looking at that, that is the opportunity that I see as an educator, that we can really fine-tune this program and set the bar to meet all the standards.
Thank you. So as an expert nursing consultant, would you agree or disagree that each visit contained unsafe care that was provided to the patient in the facility?
So from a purist point of view, not following procedures in any environment is not safe for the patient. Everything has to be upheld.
Thank you very much, because I think there was a statement made by, I think it was Deborah, that, you know, that may have made that a little unclear. So thank you. I just wanted to, you know, because we all know that we are here for the safety of the public. And that is the core of what we're trying to get at here, is that what is happening is that students are going into facilities and there is a problem with safety. And that is the bottom line. So I thank you very much for your feedback, and I'll let other members of the board address you. Thank you.
So I also think that part of that is that we have eliminated that issue by terminating those instructors that we identified, and you helped us identify that they weren't following policy. And that's why with everyone else that we have not had an issue with, we wanted to validate that they were doing the right thing, and we wanted to prove to you that they are.
Thank you. Other board members' comments?
I have a question. I want to just go back to Terry's curriculum vitae. And to me, I mean, I know that you have said you're an expert consultant, but it looks to me from your experience is that you have been very involved in the clinical arena and administrative activities that have to do with revisions of policy and procedures, and your experience, I can't really see the word consultant come out at me. Now, maybe I'm missing something. You did say in your statement that you were a consultant, but could you just tell me when and where you were a consultant?
Sure.
For an education person.
For education. So I have been an educator for a very long time in my management leader roles as well as an oncology CNS and an oncology manager. So,
right, so you haven't really taught pre-licensure. You've taught people who already graduated. They're employees. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so I have taught pre-licensure at Albany Medical School, Maria College. I have taught, which is not on my resume, Branford Hall School of Business when I was a manager at St. Ray Dale's there. And so that is the pre-licensure. However, in assessing curriculum content to meet standards, whether it's in a healthcare acute care setting or whether it's an academic environment, most recently at Franklin Pierce, I teach undergraduate and graduate school. When Franklin Pierce was going for reaccreditation, they had contingent accreditation in their master's program. I was assigned to assist as adjunct faculty to review all of the courses, meaning the essentials of the graduate program, so that it met accreditation standards, okay, so the content was there.
And you're still doing that today? You're still there today?
Yes, I am. And I teach at Post University RN to BSN program. And I just wanted to tell you that I would say about 50% of all of my students in the RN to BSN and the BSN to MSN programs, about 50% started off as LPNs, and it was their jumping off point to go into an AD program, then a BSN and an MSN program. So I do value the practical nurse program. And I feel that the educators have a huge responsibility in mentoring and coaching and bringing these students to their fullest potential.
Okay, thank you. And my other point, and I've read these responses. It's Helen. Are you still on the phone, Helen?
I am. I'm here.
Okay. So, Helen, I so appreciate the detail and the amount of effort that you put on these site visits. And when I read the responses, it looks like there's an awful lot of conflict between what you saw and what was reported. I just wanted to get your overall summary or impression of all of these points, because I kind of feel a little upset inside reading this stuff. Upset for you as our person who we rely on to get this data. What do you think, Helen?
This is Pat Buffar. Before Helen responds, I got a distinct different impression than you did, Jerry.
Okay.
As I went to the document, a lot of the stuff that Helen pointed out, they agreed happened. But they provided a context that the faculty member, it looks like, one, the orientations aren't comprehensive enough, or what I think Sherry said in terms of they're not operationalizing what they're learning in the orientation for the students. But when I look at this, they agreed with a lot of what Helen said, but they corrected it once she said it. So I went through the document, and I said they admit, they deny. There was a good response. They had some good responses. There were certain that wasn't making
it.
They didn't have any control over, like, you know, if something was locked in the director's office, obviously they couldn't get it. So I thought, on the whole, that Helen's report was pretty accurate, and they admitted it. They put it in the context. They put it in,
We did some education around that. Yeah, that's good. We think it's fixed. But I think Sherry hit it on the head. They're not operationalizing what they're supposed to be doing necessarily to help the students do what they're supposed to be doing.
And yes, I will make a
impression that you got. I thought they pretty much validated most of what Helen said, but they addressed why that happened or what they did about it. You know, and I think what Sherry pointed out, they terminated people who just couldn't do that translation for students. And I think we all agree before that it's not just, we're not blaming the students in any way.
No. I'm not blaming the students. I'm just
faculty, and I think Sherry's addressing that in her concerns, that are they able to translate what they're supposed to do to the, she used the term operate. Well, you know, I said it before, and I can't say it.
Yes.
Operationalize what they're supposed to do for the students. So I got a different impression from this document than I think you picked up. Helen, respond.
And one of the things I would like to mention, though, is that when it was addressed, it was stopped in real time with the state assessor, Ms. Smith, as well as the faculty. And then when the leadership noticed all of this, they took quick action to make sure that they prevented an unsafe event for the students and the patients. So they were on that too. They were very quick to do that.
Yes. Most of the time, they were very quick. You know, the fact that she was intimidating, you know, any instructor intimidating? I mean, really. And I guess coming with the department credentials to give you an added sense of intimidation for everyone concerned. I mean, I'm sure the facilities also, oh, God, the department's here. They didn't know she was there for a specific reason. But... I mean, I don't know, Helen, that's the impression I had of the responses, which were very detailed, which is what we asked them to do, but in most of the time, with very few exceptions, yeah, it happened, and this is what we did about it, which is what you didn't put in your report, because you didn't know what they did about it.
Hi, this is Helen, yeah. I mean, I appreciate that they gave additional information. I do appreciate that.
Other questions for Sherry from board members?
Hello. I'm a student of Port Chester. I see that this meeting is open to the public, and I'm hoping we could have it there, if allowed, please.
Is this Ms. Rodriguez?
No, I'm a student of Portland Chester.
Student, hi.
Hi. So I'm in final term. We've completed 2,422 out of 2,500 of clinical time.
Did you please one identify yourself, and two, who's ever making the noise in the background, please mute your phone, because I can't hear what the student is saying.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, speak up.
Okay. I'm a final term student. We have just 10 days left, just 10 days of clinical. And now we do not have anything to do. We have just 10 days. We've completed more than 95%. We are hoping this board could please, because it does not seem like anyone is advocating on our behalf. On behalf of my fellow students, we are pleading with you because this situation is a life-changing situation for us. We've completed everything else, just 10 days of clinical. Please, is there any way we could do this online? Please. Thank you.
Are you a Porter and Chester student?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that is something that we would need to hear from your faculty, your program, just like
okay.
We did previously from Lincoln Tech, okay? So that they will get on this based on your recommendation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi,
Hi, this is Deborah Hessel, and it's the, I know the young lady who is on the line, and I thank you for coming forward, and I will be in touch with you very soon after I finished on this call, so thank you for coming forward. I appreciate that.
Okay, any other questions on this update from Port and Chester from board members?
This is Lisa Freeman on the line. So I just want to say that for the first time, I feel like we've gotten a response that really, really responds to our concerns. I know at the last meeting, there was a feeling of that the department may have been unfair in what they observed and what they reported out on. And I want to say that in reality, it seems like that report and the fact that Port and Chester was required to respond to it, or actually I think they voluntarily responded to it point for point, I think that that's what has brought about the learning. And I think that the new consultant that they've brought on has hit the nail on the head as far as the instructors operate. Okay, Pat, I'm going to have the same problem as you, operationalizing this whole learning experience and the proper procedures versus what was happening. I feel a little bit more hopeful than I have in the past that real change may actually come about and that the student learning may become much improved. So I want to thank them for responding in the way that they did, for taking the actions, which actually speak stronger than the words. And I'm hoping that we can continue now moving forward in a very positive direction.
Thank you, Lisa. So any other comments from other board members?
No, it's just Margie Brown. I wanted to say that I agree with Pat. I went through and starred and plus signed things that weren't necessarily safety issues that would cause patient harm. It was more not understanding each other or re-educating the student or the instructor themselves. And I agree with Lisa, too, that I read the other part because I wasn't at the last meeting, and I was like, oh my, but in reading PCI's response, I feel that there is significant changes happening at PCI, which is very positive, and I'll stop there.
Other board members? Okay, I think what Deborah and Sherry, if you could provide your verbal statements to Helen so she can distribute them in writing would be helpful for board members. I have to agree with Lisa. I think this is really your response today, your overview of what you're doing has allayed a lot of our fears. But I think as a visual learner, I'd like to see it in writing. So hopefully this will put everyone on the right track. Okay. So thank you for this report. Thank you for your response.
This is Jerry. Can I ask one favor? Is it possible, I hope you can hear me, is it possible to have the statement that was prepared and read to us, was pretty lengthy, by Sherry? Could you supply that to Jeff so we can read it again? Because it was very lengthy, and I want to make sure that I got it all. Is that a possible thing?
I can forward. This is Deborah Hessel. I can forward that on, or I can pass on the contact information to Sherry so she can forward that on by all means.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
So the meeting is being recorded, or should be posted.
Jason. Okay, if there are no other questions on this part of the agenda, which now I have to find again, we'll move on. So thank you, Deborah. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you for all the attendees. Mm-hmm. And for Esther.
Thank you. I'm a student with PCI. Is there going to be a portion of this phone call where students and public can address the board?
That is at the beginning of the agenda. We did call for that. If you look at the agenda online, it's the open forum piece. We did take the student who made the plea that Ms. Heckel is going to respond to. So I don't know if you want to do it through her or you want to do it at the open forum at our next meeting on May
20th.
What, Jeff?
May 20th.
May
20th.
May 20th.
May 20th. So you can do it in either venue, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, on the agenda are a memorandum of decision. The first one is, this was in our package, the first one is Rose. So this is an affirmation for Brian Gross, RN. Does someone have a motion?
I make a motion for Brian Gross, RN, petitions Gina Reiners. I make a motion for Brian Gross, RN, petition number 2019-536, to accept the memorandum of decision as written. The decision was to revoke Mr. Gross's license.
Okay. Second, Mary Dietman.
Mary Dietman, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstaining. The vote was unanimous to affirm the MOD for Brian Gross. Next is an MOD for Laura Kazaski, RN. Do I have a motion on this MOD?
Gina Reiners, I make a motion to accept the MOD for Laura Kazaski, RN, petition number 2018-1416. Probation was extended to 5/18/21.
Thank you. A second?
Second, Mary Dietman.
Okay. Discussion? When I reviewed this MOD in the original MOD, which this was based on, she had support group mandates, but it's not in this one, unless I missed it, which sometimes I do. There is no support group in this MOD.
No support.
I had the same problem, but I think I found it afterwards.
I thought I found it too. Yeah, this is Gina. I thought I found it too.
L or M or I don't know where. Somewhere. I looked through it about five times and then finally I was like, oh God, there it is.
So it's there?
Yeah, I can look through it while we continue if you want. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure it's there.
I'm pretty sure I found it
because I had it written that it wasn't there and then I changed it to it is there, but I didn't
think
write
clean, but
let me find her here.
Yeah, I'm looking too. It's Gina. I'm looking also because I had the same thing.
You know, sometimes they tack it on at the bottom of something, but I don't know how many times I did not see it.
Okay, on page, let's see, well, I don't know how to do the page numbers, but under, let's see, I got this straight, L, it says L, H-I-J-K-L, oh, wait a minute, nope, that's not it, I'm sorry. Bear with me, no, that's not correct, sorry.
I don't think it's there.
Yeah. Well, maybe I was looking at what Pat had done and looked at the old one. I don't know.
Might have been looking at the original.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion to affirm this MOD as written and a second. All in favor?
Opposed? Me.
No,
This is Jeff. Can I make a suggestion? I don't see it either. I'll just add that paragraph in if you want to adopt it with the condition that the that page will be edited and that paragraph will be added in.
Okay, that's great, Jeff. So all in favor with the edits?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstaining. Okay, thank you. So, next is a memorandum of decision for Danielle Miranda, RN. Do I have a motion on this as presented?
Jen Long, I make a motion to accept the MOD for Danielle Miranda, RN, petition number 2019-87.
Okay, second?
Second, Mary Deepin.
Okay, discussion?
Can I ask a little point of order here? I have sent around an email that I received from the National Council on the regulations, and when there's a modification on a license that requires the attendance of, you know, 8 to 10 meetings a month. Are we going to do anything about that? Since, you know, I don't think there's a lot of meetings taking place for people who are, you know, needing support from AA or whatever. Has anybody seen anything like that? I mean, we're going to sign this, and, you know, if you look down on this particular person, Miranda, I think it's K. Let's see.
This is Stacey Shulman.
Yeah.
Currently, they are the commissioner's office and the legal office are reviewing probationary periods under MODs and consent orders. They understand that in light of what's going on with COVID-19, that a lot of places are closed and it's making it difficult for people to get urine screenings and attend meetings. So they're just trying to get everything in order so there's proper notice to any of the licensees out there that are under these probationary orders. And there may be a waiver of the probationary terms and conditions for a certain amount of time. So it's out there right now, but nothing is solidified.
So we just move ahead and then we wait. They'll make the decision and then we'll be notified.
Right, and then notification will go out to all licensees that are under probationary order.
Okay.
So in other words, what we would do, we wouldn't violate anyone if we got a recommendation to violate them because they didn't attend meetings. No, they can't attend meetings.
This right. is Dana Dalton at DPH. I supervise the monitoring unit at the department, and we're also accepting their attendance at virtual support meetings, like through Zoom and everything.
Yeah, I think there's actual virtual ones that you can join previous to this. You could, I don't know all the people that do it, but
yeah.
This is Mary Ellen Moore Lenhart.
They have access to, you know, to digital equipment to do that. So, okay.
Hello, this is Mary Ellen Moore Lenhart, and I was just—I represent Danielle Miranda, and I also am very involved with the 12-step programs. And there are a lot of virtual meetings. There are Zoom meetings. There are meetings that are occurring telephonically among people from groups. So I think that, you know, it would be great if there could be, you know, at least some relaxing of the requirement for in-person meetings. But those that are committed to their recovery seem to be reaching out among peers to continue to have the connectivity. And I know that Ms. Miranda will be doing that.
Thank you, Mary Ellen.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right, so this is Jerry. I'd like to make a motion.
What's up?
I already did.
We already have it.
Yeah?
The motion's already been made by Jerry and seconded by Mary to adopt the decision.
No,
I'm
Jen Long.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Jen. Correct.
So we have a first and a second already, Jerry, for Danielle Miranda. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstaining. Okay. So next is Charlene Zakaris, RN. So I guess I should ask if Charlene or counsel for Charlene is on the phone. Okay, so this was in our packet of information. Do I have a consent?
I make a motion. It's Gina. I make a motion to accept the memorandum of decision on Charlene Zakaris, RN, petition number 2019-522. The terms of the December 19, 2000 order are replaced in their entirety by the terms of the following order. So the respondent is paying a civil penalty of $200. The respondent's license shall be suspended for a period of 3 months. And concurrently with such suspension, the license is placed on probation for a period of 4 years.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Margie.
Discussion. All right, I had a problem with this. As usual, it's usually when it's an alcohol problem, we don't do a key restriction. But her violation was for benzos, plus alcohol.
Right.
So I'm concerned that there's no key restriction, unless I missed it.
I have no key thing, too. But.
I have no key, too. This is Gina talking. Speaking.
Yeah, Jeff, can you add that back?
I can, yes.
Because, I mean, normally we don't do this for alcohol, but for violation, it wasn't just alcohol. Okay, so you can add that back so we can affirm?
I can. I can add it in, yes. So you want to approve this as edited?
As edited with a one-year key restriction. Okay, all in favor with the edit?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstaining. All right, so next on the agenda is a motion for summary suspension. On Heather Spaulding. Is Ms. Spaulding or counsel for Ms. Spaulding on the phone? No. Okay. And for the department?
Attorney Scoville?
Was that?
Attorney
Ms. Scoville, are you on the phone?
Is there somebody from DPH presenting this? Are there any DPH attorneys on the line?
Okay.
Oh, boy. Well, I guess we got to move on. What are we going to do?
Okay. Well, can we do it on a paper? Can we do it with the paper, Jeff?
Stacy, do you have an answer to that?
Hello? Hello, can anybody hear me?
Who's this?
This is Joelle Newton. I've been hearing for a while.
Joelle,
you haven't heard me?
She's Spaulding, Joelle.
Okay. I'll do the summary suspension.
Okay, great. Okay, so we are at that point in our agenda. So this wasn't our packet of information. Do you have anything to add, Ms. Newton?
Attorney Newton, are you presenting the summary suspension?
Yeah, I just said that. I thought you heard that.
No.
Yeah, I heard that.
Oh, so, yeah. Oh, you heard it. Okay, that's all that counts then, right?
Yes, but do you have anything to add to the paper?
No, I have nothing to add.
Okay. So this was in our packet of information. Do I have pre-suspension as presented?
I make a motion to accept the summary suspension for Heather Spaulding, RN, petition number 2019-1224. As
second.
Based on her.
Second, Jerry.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Marge.
That's okay, right.
Oh, okay. Second?
Jerry, second.
Discussion.
No, I think that she is unsafe for the public at the moment, and we need to find out more about what's happening with her.
Thank you. So I have a first and second to grant the summary suspension. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining. It was unanimous to grant the summary suspension.
Okay,
right,
we'll schedule the Spaulding hearing for May 20th.
I'm sorry, May 20th?
Yes.
Okay, Jack, do you actually have this meeting? Is it still at the department, or is it in a legislative office?
Have no clue at this point.
Okay. Right, we'll have to learn. Okay. All right, so next are consent orders. The first one is on Carissa Kelly, RN, APRN. Do I have a motion on this consent order? Reprimand.
This is Gina Reiners. I will make a motion to affirm the consent order for Carissa Kelly, RN, APRN. Petition number 2019-1025 with regard to a reprimand related to also her Massachusetts license, but a reprimand for us on Connecticut.
Thank you. And a second?
Second, Mary Dietman.
Discussion? All in favor of approving the consent order as presented?
Aye.
Opposed? It was unanimous to approve the consent order. Kimberly Smith, Kimberly Smith will move to the end of this section because of the hearing. Migliaris, Norado, Opan, do I have a motion on this consent order as presented? This is the one who violated their scope. Ms. Nard.
She has, I'll make a motion to accept the consent order from Nogales, Norado. Am I saying that? Norado, RN, petition number 2019-1055.
That was Marge Brown. Okay, yes, do I have a second?
Gina, a second.
Okay, discussion?
I don't understand why there's no penalty, money penalty.
Hi, this is Sue Wellman. That's because there was no, she did not make extra income from this. The department feels that the terms that are there are appropriate to protect the public health and safety.
She wrote prescriptions and she wasn't paid to do that.
Correct. She didn't make money from doing it.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. There's a little delay here, so.
Okay, discussion?
I don't know.
This is Lisa. Oh, but, yeah. Can I ask, do you know why she was writing all, these prescriptions?
And were they
Can you, I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, you're dropping, someone's dropping out.
Are you able to share with me? I did write the paper for multiple people.
I can't, I'm sorry, I can't hear the question. Hello?
Hello? Okay, I'm trying a different approach here. Why did she write the prescriptions? What was the purpose, and were they for multiple people or just one person where she signed different doctors?
This is Jen. Long.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
It was clear in the document. What happened was, I just disconnected everybody.
No, you didn't.
No, I'm still here. There?
You're here.
Switched phones. It was very clear. She said everyone was doing it on the unit. The doctors couldn't be bothered. Prescriptions,
correct.
So all the staff were doing it.
Can you hear me, by the way? This is Joelle Newton.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Was it, though? I mean, there was nothing else. They were just doing it.
Yeah. And I hope there was a facility investigation on this one. But we don't have a concern for that. But anyway, so that's what she said when she got there. The doctors can be bothered to write prescriptions. Staff was doing it for them. I don't know if it's true
that's
or not.
What,
correct.
So the second, a motion and a second, all in favor of approving this consent order?
Yes.
Aye.
Opposed? Staining. Okay, it was unanimous to approve the consent order. So is there
a facility investigation? Because someone said everybody's doing it. So, you know, everybody, wherever they are violating the law.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully.
This is Joelle Newton. I don't know if somebody is there from that practitioner licensing investigating section, either Dana or Helen. If they're not there, which I can't tell, I will pass the message on.
Yeah, thank you, Joelle. I messed up my agenda. Okay, last on the agenda is a pre-hearing review. Is Ms. Kimberly Smith or Councilor Ms. Smith on the phone? Okay, and for the department?
Good afternoon for the department, Joelle Newton.
All right, welcome, Joelle. So, you want to provide a context for us on this?
I'm on a computer screen, so you're going to have to just give me 1 second.
Okay, no problem.
All right, 1 second. 1 second.
For board members, this is the one where the woman was diverting because her boyfriend would beat her to a pulp if she didn't.
Correct. So that's what the respondent claims is what took place, is that, you know, she didn't do that he would then beat her to a pulp.
Right. But she was mandated by the department to do substance abuse exam, and she did not complete that.
She did correct. She completed one. Right. So we really don't have any information. You know, there's not really sufficient information to know what's going on in terms of whether there's a substance abuse issue because she hasn't had the second evaluation.
Board members, discussion?
This is Jen Long. I'm reading her stance on it and the reasoning that she's giving for the diversion. However, she was offered more than one chance to go to the second appointment, Dr. Capiello, to comply with the substance abuse evaluation. She did not do that. She also refused to take a urine screen at the time. So those things to me are a little concerning. If someone's saying, yes, under duress, I had to do these things, I, you know, was afraid of the consequences if I didn't, I mean, I would have expected her to comply with the things DPH was asking her to do.
Yeah. Other comments from, I agree with you, Jen. Other comments from board members?
Oh, this is Ellie. I just have a quick comment. I did read somewhere in this paperwork that she did agree, she's willing to go ahead and do this, evaluation, but she, or the urine screen, I think. I can't really remember. She agreed to something, but she just can't afford
to. But she agreed to go. Right, this is Joelle Newton. She agreed to go to, you know, whatever, the two sessions. But for some reason, she only went to one session, she went to the second session.
Yeah, Ellie's right. She said she couldn't afford to do it. But she also
right.
can't afford to lose her license.
Right.
So, other comments from board members?
Yeah, this is Gina. It's a lot of red flags. She was, again, the same thing that was said before me. She was given the opportunity to, you know, go to the second evaluation, and she didn't. And one can understand if it's one's under duress, so forth. But, you know, if she wants to clear her name, so to speak, and be able to continue the nursing profession, it's just a lot of red flags with regard to this. I have concerns also. My comment.
Other board members?
So, I agree. I don't think we know where she is. This is Margie. I don't think we know where she is. Is she having drug issues herself or is she not? What is going on? She diverted. I don't.
Sorry, this is Ellie. I got disconnected, so I'm back on the line.
Who is this?
My recommendation Ellie? Was a 4-year probation with 6 months suspension.
Yeah,
having to get employer reports and therapy reports.
Well, I think what we don't know, though, Marge, is that we don't even know she has a substance abuse disorder. We're only red flags.
I know.
She better complete this mandate from the department or things are going to have to come to slash consent order or
rent. Whether I don't know whether this influences your opinion, but I told her several times that she should provide a statement to the board explaining everything. She told me multiple times she was going to send it, and she never did. So she was given that opportunity. As I anticipated these questions.
Yeah, I think based on what you're hearing, I think we need a summary suspension on this because we don't know if she's supposed to practice. And then we'll go from there. Do board members agree?
Yeah, this is Mary. She's never had a, Mary Deepin, she's never had a substance abuse evaluation.
Only a half of one. Correct. Yeah, half of one.
Yeah, I agree with that too, Jerry.
All right. Other comments from board members? Okay, so you got a sense of what we want to do here, Joelle?
I think so.
Okay.
So, yeah, I will get a summary suspension together for you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there any other business that the board needs to discuss? Okay. So do I have a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion. Please adjourn.
Okay, a second on that?
Second, Gina.
Very deep end.
Okay. All right, everyone stay safe and healthy. We'll hopefully
you too.
Next two, but maybe not.
Okay, you too.